Coming up on the Inside Indiana Business Television Podcast, three business juggernauts pick Indiana for expansion. We take you to a hidden gem in Martinsville. Trendiana shines a spotlight on Asian-owned businesses. We put a wrap on this year's legislative session. IU Health details one of its weapons in the battle against Parkinson's. Help is on the way for some students struggling during the pandemic. And we talk to the head of the Indiana Fever ahead of the WNBA's silver anniversary season. Welcome to the Inside Indiana Business Television Podcast. I'm Andy Ober. Three giants in the business world announced big investments in Indiana in the span of 10 days. Apple, Amazon, and Toyota plan to invest a total of more than $1 billion and add nearly 3,000 jobs. Governor Eric Holcomb joined Inside Indiana Business host Gary Dick for an extended interview on these and other projects in the pipeline around the state.
Governor Holcomb, thanks for taking time to join us. You've been busy from an economic development standpoint and job standpoint these last few weeks, and we'll get into those announcements. But when you look, what I think is noteworthy, among other things, Toyota, Amazon, Apple, all three parts of the state, not just central Indiana, but you've got Fort Wayne, central Indiana, and southwest Indiana.
Yeah, the hope is alive, and more than that, dirt's turning. And when you think about Clayton, Indiana, probably not a lot of Hoosiers could have even picked that out on a map until Apple decided to invest $100 million and create 500 new career opportunities. And as you mentioned, up in Fort Wayne, another 1,000 jobs with Amazon. They've got about 20,000 employees now in the state of Indiana. And of course, Princeton, that's invested billions over the years. We had it just seemed like yesterday I was announcing $600 million, then a $700 million, then an $800 million. So they have about 10,000 folks going through that gate every day. Toyota is bigger than the city of Princeton. And so what that means to those communities is truly transformational, whether it's helping build a YMCA in downtown Princeton, Indiana, obviously the careers and the little leagues, everything that they support. So it really has a compounding positive impact beyond just the careers that are created.
Well, when you talk about that, because I've been around long enough, I was there for the groundbreaking of that plant
25 years ago.
But the impact that you talk about, nearly 10,000 employees, that doesn't even include the supplier network down there. The impact that this $800+ million announcement is going to have on the region is exponential.
Yeah, the supply chain, and obviously, you know, the state of Indiana being the number one manufacturing state per capita in the nation, and then having our pro-growth tax and regulatory environment, that supply chain is getting closer and closer to those OEMs. And, you know, we're saying, come on in, our books are balanced, we provide you stability and continuity, predictability, and confidence that you can grow at your preferred scale and pace. And that's what you're seeing happen in those small, medium-sized companies that are coming here as well. Again, like you said, all over the state of Indiana.
Big brands, Toyota, Amazon, Apple. Do those, when you see investment and when others see investment from people like Apple and Amazon, does that have a kind of a spillover effect, kind of a domino effect? They look, hey, if they're investing in Indiana, maybe we should too.
Sure, and you know, we've enjoyed that when you have companies like Lilly and Roche and Cummins. So we've long enjoyed those marquee names, Anthem, et cetera. However, having said that, now what we're trying to do and are succeeding at is growing that whole ecosystem. So the emphasis and the sales force, you know, that are coming as well, that complement all of those efforts. We start kind of on high ground being centrally located in the United States. And a lot of companies are saying location, location, location. But that's got to be backed up with that good business climate. And then you have to have access to the workforce that you want. That is why we're leaning so heavily into building regionally around the state of Indiana. Because a company comes in and they have a salary range and they say, we can pull people from 30 miles or 45 miles, depending on that salary range. So you have to make sure that we're building a strong quality of place and life for those employees, those teammates that go to work inside that gate.
You talk about building infrastructure. Let's look to Northwest Indiana. You know, outside these three big announcements we talked about, but the South Shore Extension, massive infrastructure, transformational, generational project going on up there.
Been over 100 years since the, you know, the South Shore line's been single tracked, so going one way. Now we're double tracking that. So imagine the potential for growth along that route, and then coming down, you know, from Hammond to Dyer, the Westlake corridor expansion as well, and having those new hubs that are magnetic. And when you think about the growth that we're seeing coming from the west and coming up across the river in the south, you know, in these two opposite ends of our state, Jeffersonville and the Gary, that whole region, the sky's really the limit for where we end up in 10 or 20 years, and that's what we're planning for.
Mm-hmm. The future, very quickly, and we'll talk more after the break, but the River Ridge Commerce Center, Jeffersonville, you mentioned is an enormous 6,000 acres, and it continues to grow as well.
Yeah, and you know, you think about the percentage of that acreage that we still have left to develop, and so you'll see some more headlines come soon about the continued growth, because obviously companies, you mentioned the supply chain, this is all about customer convenience, being on time, ahead of schedule, under budget. We offer all that, and so you see a Clayton, Indiana that's prime location in terms of our road system, our rail system, our airports and water ports, ultimately, to be able to get anywhere in the world and start right here in the heart of the heartland.
Ready. Okay, it's Regional Economic Acceleration and Development Initiative,
right.
$500 million massive program approved by the legislature. It's kind of the next iteration of the Regional Cities Initiative. What's it all about?
Yeah, get ready for the future. That's what it's all about. It's about talent attraction. It's about retentions. It's about building good quality of places all throughout the state of Indiana, harnessing that synergy, whether it's rural, urban, or suburban, thinking outside the lines, and I mean, you know, county lines, political lines, erase those and start thinking bigger. Start thinking about, you know, projects that are worthy, not just shovel ready. And so we know through this first iteration, as you said, with the Regional Cities Initiative, we put in $126 million of state dollars, good money up front, and that equated to about $1.22 billion. So we're thinking, how do we maximize our field position right now and accelerate away from the pandemic? And to just think for a second about that amount of activity on top of everything we're doing right now, simultaneously in 10 or 12 regions of the state of Indiana, this is where you get to start to paint the canvas yourself and think about what are our threats in our region. We can address those for the first time, whether it's hunger or homelessness or you know, workforce development programs or vacant buildings. This is the time to really spruce it up and truly take it to the next level. So we're looking at billions of investment coming in as folks start to think about how to attract more, not just attention, not just more visitors, you know, Indiana becoming a destination to work, play, and ultimately stay, but to make it so that folks have a sense of pride about what they've accomplished looking back on all the activity that's going on.
So a big number, $500 million economic development projects, but also quality of life, quality of place, these things that get back to town, as we talked about. 3,000 jobs or so announced in the last couple of weeks. Where are you going to get that talent from? That's a big question.
We have to skill it up. We have to do all the above. We have to make sure that our farm team, our K-12 system, that pipeline is producing students who wish to go right into a career, have that pathway to do it. We have to be reskilling, upskilling folks that are out there, maybe not just on the sidelines. We've got, you know, 108,000 unfilled jobs right now in the state of Indiana. And so when you start to think about, you know, not just minimum wage, these are some of our fast food restaurants are starting at $14 an hour. The jobs that we are bringing in through the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, they're just a tick under $30 an hour. So we truly have an all the above. Now, we got to make sure that we're matching and connecting you with not just that career, but the skills that you need to fill those jobs. And that's where we're starting to run out in front of the competition, is being that concierge as a state, as a city, you know, the local community, to build up that workforce that's in your backyard right now.
Yeah, it's, as we wrap up, Governor, your take on how Indiana's positioned to come out of the pandemic. Certainly a lot of momentum, but, you know, some pain in the restaurant business, tourism, some other sectors. Yeah. How is Indiana as a state, in your view, positioned post-pandemic?
Well, you know, another thing that came out of this budget and a reminder was we went into the pandemic in such a strong fiscal position. And that's a reminder about how important that really was and still is. We're still there. I said when we come out of this, I want to be stronger than we were going in it. We paid off debt or avoided debt to the tune of about $1.6 billion coming out of this budget. We have a $2 billion plus dollar reserve. We have a structural surplus going forward. So we maintain that AAA, you know, credit, state credit rating status. After the pandemic, the name of the game from now on is skilling up our workforce at every turn for every sector. And that's where we'll be, you know, squarely focused.
All right. Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb on the state of the economy. Governor, thanks for joining us. With that perspective, we look forward to seeing you soon.
I'm going to roll up my sleeves, put the hard hat on.
Morgan County is home to the state's only all-in-one manufacturer of wine, beer, and spirits. Inside Indiana Business reporter Mary Rachel Redman headed to Martinsville to sample the food and drinks at Cedar Creek Winery and Brew Company.
Where can you find a winery, brewery, and distillery all in the same spot? In Indiana, there's only one answer.
Welcome to Cedar Creek. We distill our mistakes.
Hidden in the vast canopy of trees in Morgan County, just a quick jaunt off 37, is Cedar Creek. Undoubtedly unique and the brainchild of the Elsner family.
We bought the property back in 2010, started building all the buildings out here.
First came Cedar Creek Winery.
After being here at the winery 4 or 5 years, people would make the comments of, oh, you know, we prefer beer rather than wine. That thought crossed of, why not do beer? You know, we have a winery, let's do a brewery. Let's jump into it.
And they did just that, and then some.
We opened the brewery in 2015. Then my sister, she opened up our distillery in 2016.
Well, one of the things that we're most predominantly known for is our flavored rums. We do a variety of signature cocktails. These are our shared cocktail and spirits flights.
So it's not just booze.
No.
You can actually do a cocktail.
We do like a pina colada, an apple, a blackberry.
Where's the pina colada? Oh, it's cute. It's got a little handle.
A little mason jar style.
That's delicious. And there's alcohol in there?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it'll find you. It'll find you if you keep drinking it. I promise. Probably the most popular thing that we got going right now is our single batch bourbon expressions. Each one of these came out of a different barrel, and so you can get a kind of a different flavor note just from how, you know, how it was aged or how we ended up working with the environmental conditions on that barrel.
So does it taste good straight?
Absolutely. I love it. It's fantastic.
120 proof?
Oh yeah. Go for it. So, cheers to you.
Cheers. That's actually really good.
Yeah.
Cedar Creek has also launched its own boutique cigar brand.
So they are all going to be hand-rolled down in Honduras. All the tobacco's grown in Honduras, Nicaragua. Our blends, we've geared more towards smoking cigars with drinking beer.
Almost like a wine tasting, right?
Yeah.
Wine and cheese?
Yes. Yeah,
cigar
so
we wanted it to
pair well.
And as if all that wasn't enough, the Morgan County venue will begin its annual Drink at the Creek series.
Within the state, we're probably one of the largest private entertainment venues available. Fantastic music. Very, very few places have everything like this. It's family friendly from front to back. But you can have your children anywhere on the grounds here. If you want a cocktail, if you want a beer, if you want a glass of wine, you can find everything on one site.
Mary Rachel Redman, Inside Indiana Business.
Culture is at the heart of this month's Trendiana as we celebrate Asian American, Pacific Islander, and Desi American Heritage Month. Yelp Senior Regional Lead of Marketing and Communications Brittany Smith highlights the growing number of successful Asian-owned businesses throughout the state in our Trendiana segment.
Yeah, I think this story is reflective of the diversity on the restaurant scene around the state of Indiana. And that's certainly, when you talk about Asian-owned businesses, that's certainly the case.
So true. And I know food is just one category of businesses, but it's a great way to explore. And hopefully folks can get out there and learn something new about different cultures and our neighbors here in Indiana.
All right. As always, you're giving us a statewide tour of some great businesses around Indiana. And we start to the east in Richmond. And this is a drive-through concept too, Thai Terra.
Yeah, Tytera has converted since COVID hit actually to a drive-through type concept, which is amazing. I'm actually a little jealous of it to have some drive-through Thai right there in Richmond off of 70. You can pick out some of the classics that maybe if you're new to Thai, they've got Pad Thai. They've also got sesame chicken as some of the most popular items in their Yelp reviews. They also are known for their Tom Yum soup, which is presented beautifully and really great for sharing with your family.
All right, going to a college town now, West Lafayette, and One NY Cafe and Bakery.
Yeah, this one actually just opened up in 2020, and they describe themselves as being an Asian bakery with a variety of treats, but also lunch items. Some of the really fun menu items that they have are the purple rice burritos that you mentioned, egg tarts, pineapple buns. Yelpers really love the mango lattes and the taro lattes. So you can get something a little bit sweet and savory there.
Okay, our next stop, getting some national attention, Egg Roll Number One in Indianapolis.
Yeah, this actually made our top 100 places to eat in the United States list for 2021. Top dishes that you're going to find there are the fresh spring rolls, the pho thai, which if you're new to pho, that's actually like a beef noodle soup with really amazing broth. And if you're a coffee fan, I'd suggest trying out their Vietnamese coffee. A lot of people don't realize that Vietnam is the second largest producer of coffee in the world. So great little way to get a caffeine fix, too.
Okay, heading back up. Love it how this is statewide to Northern Indiana, Mishawaka, and Sunny's Korean Kitchen.
Yeah, this business has been around for nearly 30 years in Mishawaka. And the really fun thing about it is Sunny, the owner, actually hails from South Korea, uses a lot of creativity in her dishes, but you're also going to find classics like the bibimbap, the chopchae glass noodles. And the thing that other also stands out in Yelp data is that more and more people are looking for Korean eateries and to try Korean food. And this is one of those great spots found right here in Indiana.
Okay, 30 seconds, Brittany. Big Burmese population in Indiana. A lot of Burmese population in Fort Wayne, here in Indianapolis, Chin Brothers Restaurant.
Yeah, so right there on the south side of Indiana in the Southport Greenwood area, several wonderful Burmese restaurants and grocery stores. Chin Brothers is actually both, so you can go in, have the dining and try out some new dishes, but also pick up some ingredients to go home and try making Burmese food for yourself.
Always a great tour around the state of Indiana, Brittany, Asian-owned businesses around the state. Thanks for joining us as always, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much.
Indiana lawmakers recently wrapped up this year's legislative session. Major issues on the table included economic development, education, and broadband access. We get perspective from Indiana Chamber of Commerce President Kevin Brenniger.
Bottom line, was this a good session for Indiana business?
This was a very, very good session for Indiana business overall. There were some important legislation. Our number one priority with lawsuit liability limitations passed early in the session. There were significant investments in regional economic development that will improve our quality of place and our attractiveness, which is important to offset the talent deficits that we have. There was a significant increase in broadband funding, $250 million to address underserved areas and other key initiatives as well.
Okay, let's break down a couple of those. One, education is getting a lot of attention, certainly. Big number, nearly $2 billion. Were you surprised at the size of the funding for education?
Well, I wasn't when I saw the revenue forecast update in mid-April that forecasted an additional $2.4 billion in state revenue. So that nearly $2 billion is an increase over the biennium, not that doesn't even include the base. That's in addition to the federal money that's going directly to the schools. Mm-hmm. And that will boost teacher pay, which is something the chamber has supported. We also saw $500 million of federal money going into the UI Trust Fund to bolster that up so that we keep that positive and the state doesn't have to borrow and then charge employers. And an important increase in the minimal exemption for the business personal property tax from $40,000 to $80,000, which will allow 35,000 additional small businesses will no longer have to pay that tax.
Yeah, Kevin, talk about the next iteration, if you will, of the Regional Cities Initiative.
Yes.
$500 million, a greatly expanded program to really focus on economic development, quality of life, talent in regions around the state.
Yes, indeed. The original program was kind of a winner-take-all. There were three regions that won $42 million each. This will allow any and every region to come together, put together multi-jurisdictional projects of importance for quality of place, quality of life, and be able to tap into that fund, which will be managed by the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, and they'll evaluate those based on how much local match you're generating and how much impact those projects will have on making your region of the state attractive to folks from out of state.
Yeah, Governor Holcomb earlier on the show talked about that and the potential for $2+ billion in additional private investment. Broadband, access to broadband in underserved areas, huge issue for Indiana. A lot of money going to address that.
Yes, indeed. There's an appropriation of $250 million additional to expand broadband into underserved areas. And I've been saying that while broadband is not quite as much of a necessity as electricity and water, it's trending in that direction in this 21st century economy, particularly with remote work. And that will be important to allow our businesses and our citizens to prosper.
Kevin, the chamber didn't get everything it wanted on its agenda. In your view, what were some missed opportunities and the potential impact there?
Well, we certainly got as much or more than we expected, but the missed opportunities were on the cigarette tax. We have the fourth highest smoking rate in the country, one of the lowest cigarette taxes, but we did able to push through a first ever tax on e-cigarette products, which will help deter youth smoking. We didn't get the requirement or the expectation that the federal assistance for free student aid form or FAFSA be expected. Our FAFSA filing rate and our college going rate is below that of other states. That was a disappointment. And then, of course, the work share program, which would give employers an additional tool to use during economic downturns to keep employees connected to them. And we've passed on as much as $200 million in federal money to shore up our UI fund. Would have been even higher than the $500 million that was put in by the budget.
Covered a lot of territory, a big session of the Indiana General Assembly. Kevin Brinegar, Indiana Chamber of Commerce, as always, thanks, and we'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure, Gary.
Remember, you can catch Inside Indiana Business Television on stations throughout the state every weekend. Head to InsideIndianaBusiness.com to check listings. IU Health Neurology is on the cutting edge of new technology to provide stimulation treatment for patients living with Parkinson's, tremors, and chronic pain. Dr. Elizabeth Zauber talks about Neurosphere with Kylie Valletta in the Business of Health.
All right. Well, before we talk about this new device, let's start first with an introduction to deep brain stimulators in general. They've been around about 20 years now, and it all starts with a surgical procedure.
That's right. Yeah. So deep brain stimulation surgery, we also call it DBS for short, is a neurosurgical procedure. It's used to treat a variety of brain disorders, most commonly essential tremor and Parkinson's disease. And what's involved is that it delivers electrical impulses into the brain, and that can help to significantly reduce the tremors in someone with essential tremor or to control other involuntary movements in people with Parkinson's disease. As you said, it's been around for a while, it's well established, and it can have a really big impact on patients' quality of life.
All right, so let's talk about this new deep brain stimulator from Abbott. Really, it takes telemedicine to the next level. What does this new device now allow you to do?
Yeah, so after the neurosurgeon places this device, there's a process of tuning the electricity, and that's something that me and my team do, and that typically requires a long time of patients coming into the office and having it adjusted until we get the settings optimized. So that typically would require a lot of in-office visits. This new update will allow patients who have Abbott DBS to receive those types of visits in their home and allow them to not have to make as many frequent trips to Indianapolis. And this is a big advance. It's never been done with DBS, and it's never been done with any particular type of implanted device before.
And you mentioned this really will make it easier for patients who live, you know, outside of Indianapolis. They won't have to make so many trips to come in.
That's right. Because we are a large academic center here in Indianapolis at IU Health and IU School of Medicine, we do draw patients from all four corners of the state. And many patients have to drive several hours to get here. And so being able to have some of their visits performed at home will be a big benefit for them.
And IU Health was among just a handful of programs throughout the U.S. selected to be part of this early market release. What do you think that says about IU Health's neurology program?
Yeah, so this type of treatment requires a really coordinated approach between neurology, neurosurgery, anesthesia, nurses, our industry partners, and it's a high-level specialized treatment that we think we provide a really good high quality of care. And I think this reflects that, as well as a large volume of patients that we treat over a large geographic area.
So as
and it's also, go ahead.
Oh, you go ahead.
I was just going to say it's also a sign that we are seen as leaders in this particular area and helping to move technology forward.
As we all know, the use of telemedicine has certainly exploded during the pandemic. Do you think that really helped open the door to this device?
Certainly. One advantage is that this it doesn't require a new implant for these patients. If patients already have an Abbott DBS, they can just get a software update. But I think the software update was likely able to occur much more quickly because of the explosion of telemedicine that's occurred during the COVID-19 pandemic. Not only have physicians become more comfortable treating patients remotely, but patients have gotten much more used to using telemedicine to access care. And so it's definitely opened the door for this type of advance.
And this is really a niche device right now. Just a few seconds left. About how many Hoosiers are using it now, and kind of what do you expect to happen to that number?
I'd say, yes, probably a handful of patients currently have this device and can access these types of visits. But since we're a center that implants about 70 or so DBS per year, we could certainly see that number grow quite a bit in coming years.
All right. Well, Dr. Zauber, it's an absolutely fascinating technology. Thanks for being on the show today to share a little bit more about it.
Thanks for having me.
COVID-19 has put school districts to the test, so the Mind Trust and United Way of Central Indiana are stepping up to help. The organizations are launching Indy Summer Learning Labs, a free summer educational enrichment program for students who have struggled during the pandemic. We get details from United Way of Central Indiana CEO Ann Mertlow and the Mind Trust CEO Brandon Brown.
This is an interesting program and very creative to address, Brandon, a huge issue in schools all over the United States, certainly, I guess for that matter, around the globe, and the impact that the pandemic has had on learning, on students. Talk about that, how substantial that impact really is.
Yeah, it's significant. If you think back, 13 months ago in the middle of March, schools were literally asked overnight to completely overhaul how they try to educate students. And the initial research over the last 12 months says that students across the board have lost several months of learning. And in particular, students of color have lost up to a year of learning. And we know that a lot of academic disparities already existed 12 months ago, and they're just exacerbated at this point. So we just feel like it's a moral imperative to do as much as we can to try to catch kids up.
And I know you and Brandon got together and started a discussion that led to the creation of these summer learning labs. Why, from your standpoint, from United Way standpoint, is this such an important endeavor?
Well, education is a huge part of success for children and for them as adults, obviously. The pandemic has put a wrench in all of this, both for parents and for children. And we know that our most vulnerable children have struggled the most with the disruptions in education, with not having access to internet, to not having maybe the help that they need to resolve technology issues. I mean, mm-hmm. it's really a differentiator. So what we wanted to do here was to really address an acute need created by the pandemic, but also create a high quality program that could then be used as an accelerator for learning going forward as well. So we have both short-term interests and long-term educational goals we're trying to address here.
Yeah, Brandon, talk about how the summer learning labs are going to work. As we were talking off camera, you're up now to 46 sites, and you expect to serve maybe as many as 7,000 students. Talk about the model and how it will work.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was just clear to both Ann and I that we couldn't put the onus completely on schools. This needed to be a community-wide effort. So our initial vision was not just to engage schools, but to engage nonprofit organizations, youth-serving organizations, and churches to really take a comprehensive approach. And we're excited to announce today that there are going to be 46 sites across the city that will have seats for at least 7,000 students. And these are a wide array of organizations that already work with kids that have really put a stake in the ground and said that we're going to spend 5 weeks this summer to accelerate learning for as many kids as possible. And I'm personally excited that it's not just a school-based effort. This is a community-based effort. And I'm really excited about what we learned this summer and then how we apply this to the education system moving forward.
Yeah, so really impacting students impacted by the pandemic. And Ann, as you touched on this earlier, this is a summer program, summer learning labs, but this is something you want to make a longer-term commitment to.
We do. We really want to see the results of this, but we're bringing high-quality curriculum and really great enrichment opportunities together to make this a great opportunity and experience for the kids. But we also really want to prove out the concept that this can be an accelerator for education so that kids that may be behind where they should be have an opportunity to take short courses, essentially, and mm-hmm. really be able to catch up in a way that is useful for both them, that is fun for them, but also really works for their families.
Yeah, and Brandon, as we wrap up, you have a real need for teachers too, right, for these programs.
Yeah, it's been not only a long year for students, it's been a long and hard year for teachers. So we're offering a $10,000 stipend for high-quality teachers to work this summer to serve kids, which is about twice as much as what a teacher normally would get for the summer. Mm-hmm. So if you're a high-quality teacher out there, we need your efforts this summer, we need your talents, and we value you. And we think that you could be one crucial part of a comprehensive effort to really help kids.
IndySummerLearningLabs.com is where you can find much more information on this unique program, maybe unique in the country. Indiana Summer Learning Labs, Ann Mertlow, CEO at United Way of Central Indiana, Brandon Brown, CEO at the Mind Trust. Thanks for joining us. We look forward to following the story in the weeks ahead.
Sounds great. Thanks, Gary.
And finally this week, the WNBA is celebrating its 25th year with creative, eye-popping jerseys with city-specific designs. On top of that, teams will return to playing in front of fans after last season in the wobble. Indiana Fever President and Chief Operating Officer Allison Barber previews the upcoming season with Bill Benner on Inside Indiana Sports.
Allison, again, a year away from Indianapolis, spent in the wobble where the team went 6-16. It's been a while since they made the playoffs, but I know that everybody is excited, A, about the return to Indianapolis, but B, about the return of a hopefully much improved team. Talk about that if you would.
Sure. Tamika and Coach Stanley have done a wonderful job of really recreating the Fever. And so we've brought back some terrific veterans and then added to our roster with these amazing rookies who have great energy and style and have brought a lot of life to the team already. And training camp has been energized. So we're confident about the future of the Fever. We're so grateful to our loyal fans who hung in there through the wobble last season, and they're ready to come back, and we're ready to host them.
Allison, the team will start out at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, I believe, for the first four games, then move to the Indiana Farmers Coliseum at the State Fairgrounds. The Coliseum, you know, got great nationwide attention during the NCAA tournament, so I know you're looking forward to that as well. And the move is because of construction at the Fieldhouse.
That's right. We're happy to host our fans and our teams at the Fieldhouse for May, which will be really exciting for people to see the new facilities and our just everything that we've done so well at the Fieldhouse. And then moving over to the Coliseum is such a great partnership. You know, Cindy Hoy and her leadership and her team, they were thrilled and proud to be the home of the Indiana Fever for the summer. And we're going to have a great time out there. Our fans are excited about that arena as well. So, you know, Bill, between the game that they're going to see with the Fever on the floor and our fans cheering us on, I think this summer is going to be our best that we've had in a long time.
Allison, one of the positives that come out of the time in Florida last year was the Fever and the WNBA. They attracted large audiences. I mean, there was a real appetite for WNBA basketball.
You know, what we're watching happen across the country is just this movement around. It started a while ago, but now there's really great energy around this, the
importance of inclusion and diversity. And people, both corporations, you know, we're thrilled. Our new partnership with Anthem is a testimony to this. Companies are coming alongside women's sports saying, boy, this impact that the female athletes can have in the community is really critically important to society. And so we're finding new partners. We just announced Google as a partner. Of course, we've got Salesforce and Ascension are terrific partners to the Fever. But it's not just about basketball. It's about the work in the community that our athletes are doing. And we're finding great alignment and synergy, and it's going to just continue to increase. We're sure of that.
Allison, Tierra McGowan is back. Lauren Cox, last year's first round draft choice. Jantel Lavender, Kelsey and Tiffany Mitchell in the backcourt. And you have a 6'10 girl who will be the tallest in the NBA, Betty Hatar from Hungary. And so, the pieces are being put into place.
You know, that's so true, Bill. And this is what happens when you attract a coach like Mary Ann Stanley, putting together a puzzle piece by piece. How do we really build out this championship culture on the court, in the community? But you do it methodically. And that's why we've been thrilled about, you know, we've had a tough start, you know, just reimagining the Fever. But we have all the pieces in place. And I'm confident between Coach Stanley and Tamika and our newest coaches, Jared Simpson and Vicky Hall, former in Miss Basketball here in Indiana, and Steve Smith, of course, our coaches are right on track to put this all the puzzle pieces in place for the championship.
As we wrap up, talk real quickly. Tamika Catchings, of course, a legend, finally going into the Naismith Hall of Fame next weekend, a tremendous honor for her.
Oh, we're thrilled for Tamika, so deserved of this honor. And I think everybody who knows Tamika knows that she's the real leader that you want in a community. And we're proud of her and can't wait to hoist her, you know, new jersey in the field house that says Hall of Fame. She deserves it.
Well, Dr. Allison Barber, thanks for joining us on the program. And we are so excited to see Fever basketball back in Indianapolis. Best of luck.
Thanks, Bill.
That wraps up this week's Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. Remember, you can find all of this week's TV segments, as well as the top business news from throughout the state, at InsideIndianaBusiness.com. While you're there, you can also subscribe to our platform of free e-newsletters. This is Andy Ober for Inside Indiana Business.